Welcome back, Questers. A few years ago, I had the pleasure of interviewing somebody I look up to, superstar in the paranormal field. She made a name for herself on the popular show Paranormal State. Went on to travel the dead with her buddy Heather Taddy. Paranormal Lockdown, Portals to Hell with Jack Osborne. Paranormal Lockdown was with Nick Groff. Just a superstar in the paranormal field. She's doing big things, and probably one of my most prized interviews in the paranormal field, and that was with Miss Katrina Wideman. Katrina Wideman, y'all. Just amazing. And redoing this interview, bringing it back up, because it's still relevant today. This is my interview I had with Miss Katrina Wideman. It was amazing. And I'm excited to share with you now. We're going to start this party out with McKaylin Hay featuring Extro. And the song is called Close. I'm Roy Washington. This is The Quest. And we got you locked in.
Saw you for the first time in a while, you seemed so surprised. I worked out a smile, out a smile, out a smile. Cause I've grown and I've changed. Yeah, we went separate ways. How come we're both back here? Cause you push me away, let my life rearrange. But still, we're both back here. Back here. Close to me. I want you close to me. I can see. See that you wanted me.
Today I'm speaking with someone who I think is a legend, or who was on her way to being a legend in the paranormal field. First seen her on Paranormal State, and that's one of my favorite shows. And I just want to introduce everyone to Miss Katrina Wideman.
Yes, hello. Yeah, thank you. And you got my last name right, too. Many people get it wrong.
Oh, well, how do they pronounce it?
Weedman.
Weedman?
That's not right. Yeah.
Okay.
This is Chris Weidman, the boxer. I don't really know. He's gotten fame. People have been calling it correctly lately, but, you know, still getting it wrong, so, yeah.
Okay. I was reading up on you a little bit to say you was born in Pennsylvania, a small town in Pennsylvania.
I was. Yeah, I am. I'm still based outside of Philadelphia. So born and raised there. And it's funny, I actually grew up in like a very historic area, you know, especially with Philadelphia being the capital of the state for 10 years. And, you know, a lot of the Revolutionary War being fought here.
Oh.
There's like so many different people that I meet that have a ghost story in the area that I grew up in. So it's kind of like ingrained in me from a very early age.
A lot of spirit activity there, you say, because of the war, right?
You run into that in some places where I grew up, historic ends especially. There's been a couple. I know one in New Hope, Pennsylvania. And the story goes is that, you know, during the Revolutionary War, since times of it were fought in the winter and it was so cold, they couldn't actually bury the soldiers because the ground was frozen. So there were a couple places there, particularly this one inn, where they had to keep the bodies of the dead soldiers in the basement.
Wow.
And, you know, if you talk to people that work at this inn, even if they don't know the history, everyone feels very afraid down there and just like very uneasy. And this particular inn has had a lot of activity over the years. They've been in operation for a very long time. So you occasionally hear people, you know, having stories of seeing like a Revolutionary War soldier, things like that. And obviously, you know, we're not that far off from Gettysburg, so Civil War, you know, specters come to play too in the area where we live.
What got you into your interest into the paranormal?
So it started really, I was young and my parents had bought a house with activity. So I lived there from the time I was born until I was six.
Okay.
And then they bought another house after that, and that house also had activity. So I have only lived in, to date, one house that didn't have any activity. What was interesting about it is that during my time at the house, that was the one without activity is the first time I realized every other house I lived in had something going on, because there was such an absence of things that I considered normal. And then I started to piece it together that, you know, all these little things that happened in the house or all these feelings I had in the house, you know, I didn't have in this particular house. And I was like, oh, you know, I'm doing those things because I feel very uncomfortable in every other place I've lived in.
Okay.
And so it started very, very early. And my mother's side of the family had always had experiences. My father's side didn't. So it was kind of an interesting upbringing. I was never told not to believe, but there's always a sort of like, oh yeah, you know, these things happen, blah, 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 blah. But it was also wasn't necessarily encouraged either. Like, you know, so if I had an experience, a lot of times it would just sort of be like, okay, like, you know, oh, it might be something else. You know, so they didn't necessarily like deny the fact that these things or that people experience these things.
Okay.
But it wasn't exactly like every experience I had, not, you know, wasn't always validated. So it was an interesting upbringing that way.
Well, like, what's maybe a story or something that happened when you was growing up that was paranormal?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, it's funny because I just got together with my mom and we were talking about this. And the house that I lived in from the time I was a baby until I was six, every family that lived there after us has had experiences. And the person who bought the house after us was my aunt. Actually, I'm sorry, somebody else bought the house and they started renting it out. And my aunt was the first renter.
Okay.
And she had experiences, and her experiences went far beyond anything that we had happened, that we remember at least. My cousin at the time, he was just a baby, and his toys, the battery-operated toys, they would turn on and off by themselves, even if they didn't have batteries.
Wow.
Things like that would happen a lot. She would have the Mylar balloons, you know, that you get for people's birthdays. She would have them, you know, when they deflate and are like on the ground. I guess there were a couple of occasions where the deflated one followed her around the house, even up the stairs. And it wasn't like stuck to her or anything like that. It would just follow her. She said there were, I think, two Labor Days where over the baby monitor, she heard a little girl come through saying, "Mommy, help me." And she had actually, she checked with all the neighbors, she checked with the company, couldn't figure out a logical explanation for it, and she had a little boy who wasn't of age to talk like that yet. So she could never make sense of that. And I recently found out, as in a couple of years ago, because they were all townhouses, and a lot of your yards backed up to other people's yards. And so our neighbors whose yard backed up to ours recently found out that they would have experiences in their house, and that the townhouse next to theirs, the neighbors actually used headstones to prop up their house. And I was like, wait a minute, where did they find these headstones? And my ex-neighbor told me that they were in their yard and they had just found them.
Okay.
And they needed something to lift up, I guess, a corner of their house. There was like a stone was missing or something, and so they just put these headstones in there. So there were a lot of weird experiences that way. And one of the families that moved in after my aunt left actually approached my mom, and they said, you know, can we ask you a question? And my mom was like, well, sure. And she's like, have you guys had weird things happen in this house? And my mom was like, well, what do you mean? And that's when they told her that their children's boys were playing by themselves. And then the current owner is interesting, because the current owner doesn't have any children and always kind of seems to be centered around children, that haunting. And so I've spoken to her many times, and she has never had an experience. She doesn't really believe it's haunted. But she did tell me when she first bought the house, she would let her clients stay there. And one day, she had a client that came to her, and he had stayed the night, and he went to her the next day and said, you know, you never told me this house was haunted. And she's like, well, it's not, so I don't know what you're talking about. And he's like, well, there was a man standing, I guess he was standing like in the doorway, or he saw him go past the doorway. And what's interesting is my sister, my sister saw this in the 80s. So my sister, like 25 years prior to this man staying there, used to see a man walking up and down the staircase.
Wow.
So I always found that interesting, because he had no knowledge of my sister's experience. You know, I mean, he wanted us, and she had no knowledge of my sister's experience. So that to me was always a really interesting story.
Wow. So you go to Penn State University.
Yes.
How? What was that process like? Paint that picture for me. As far as you hooking up with PRS and Ryan Buell.
Yeah, so PRS, I was a transfer student. When I first got to Penn State, I was talking to my aunt, actually, who she's had a lot of experiences. And at the time, ghost hunters had just come out.
Right.
And I was saying, like, you know, we were just kind of talking about it and the paranormal in general. She's like, you know, you should see if they have a club up there. So that night, I just looked it up. They had, like, a club website for Penn State. And sure enough, they had a paranormal club.
Okay.
So I went to their next meeting, and at that meeting I met Elfie and Ryan and Sergi and a couple other people, and but I had to actually drop out at that time, because not out of college but out of the club, because when I first transferred, it was like all this, like, it was like a storm of bad luck that just hit me.
Okay.
And it was a double major and a minor, and it was just like, I was like, all right, well, let me take some time off from like extracurricular activities and just focus on my studies. So I went back 2 years later, and I had to put in an application to become an investigator. So I did that, and I got accepted. And at the same time, they were having auditions. And I say auditions, but they weren't really auditions. They were just like, can you articulate in front of a camera? Like, you know what I mean? But they were just, I guess, like screen testing people for the show. And I was one of the people that they chose for that.
Wow. So do you think that you being so experienced dealing with paranormal coming into it, do you think that helped you out?
What was that?
with all your experiences coming up with living in paranormal houses, you know, with a lot of activity, do you think that helped you out as far as getting in with PRS? Because you were kind of seasoned.
Since I grew up in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so, because I remember the first, and again, it wasn't like an audition. I remember it was Ryan Sergi, Elfie, one of the producers who has since become a good friend of mine, and then somebody just running a camera, and it was just me and them in a little room, and they were just asking my thoughts on the paranormal.
Okay.
And I remember Ryan told me later, the reason why he wanted me is because when we were talking about families, because PRS was very based on, we were client-based, so it wasn't just about documenting the paranormal. That was certainly a part of it, but it was more about, people have these experiences, and whether they're real or not, they believe that they're real.
Okay.
So, we need to offer some kind of help, because there is no help for people that go through this stuff.
Right.
So it's like, this happened many times where it turned out to be more of like a psychological problem or environmental issue going on in the house. They still believed it was paranormal, and we were kind of there to help them figure out that it wasn't. So that was PRS's whole stance and mission. And I remember they asked me a question of, what would you do if like something really horrible happened on an investigation, meaning like the paranormal? And my answer was something like, well, I want to go out running and screaming because I'm pretty sure that would make the clients feel horrible. I remember Ryan saying, like, I chose you to go forward because of that, because you need people that, aren't going to put themselves ahead of the clients. So that I distinctly remember about that interview.
Now, was PRS on, when did the TV contract come? Well, were they on TV at that time, or was this before?
No, I wasn't involved when they did the pilot. They shot a pilot in 2006, and I joined back up in the club in 2006. So I had joined back up in the club, put in my application, that got accepted, and then they had put out an announcement later that they were going to do a TV show. I guess at that time they had officially been picked up by A&E to shoot the first season, and they needed to bring on some more people, like, because in the pilot, it's interesting, there's a bunch of investigators, because PRS was actually a really big club. There were like 40 people, and I think there were probably times where it was more people than that, and people had various levels of involvement. Some people just came to the weekly club meeting, other people went through the investigation training, and other people would just like kind of volunteer more where they could. So they wanted to, if you watch the pilot, there's a lot of people involved, and I think the producers just keep it less confusing.
Okay.
As far as like who was part of the team, they made it like a core team. So LV, Ryan, and Sergi wanted to add to their core team, because at the time it was really just them and I think a few other people who, from my understanding, were graduating or didn't want anything to do with the TV show. So we wanted to take on some trainees, and that's when Heather and I were invited to join them.
Yeah, Heather's pretty cool, too. I like Heather. I like Sergi. And, of course, Ryan.
Yeah, Heather's my best friend.
Heather's your best friend?
Yeah, Heather's my best friend.
Okay.
We talk all the time. We became best friends through college, but the club. We were at we were at a club meeting together, and we both noticed each other because we liked each other's shoes.
Hey.
So we talked after the club meeting, and we found out we had a lot of common, and we just became like good friends. And then, I don't know, call it fate, but then we both got asked to join on this journey.
Oh.
And we just became the best of friends through all of it. So.
Yeah, because I have Paranormal State Season 2, the complete season. And I watched that a lot, but just tell Heather next time you talk to her that I kind of feel sorry for her, because it seemed like on some of those, it was some episodes you weren't on, but some of the episodes, it seemed like they always had her in the basement by herself and everybody else is upstairs, or they had her in the bathroom all by herself, and I'm like, why are they, and then when they went to the ranch, they had her in what's the other young lady name? That was funny. They had them out in the woods. Her and Alfie out in the woods.
Yeah.
and all the guys are like kind of together somewhere else. You know, why are you putting the? That's kind of funny to me. And then they said, they got on the radio and they called them and said, there's something big is heading your way towards. You know, and Elfie's like, let's go that way. She said, Heather's like, no, you want to go towards it? You know, but it was crazy.
Yeah. And I think Elfie would come prepared. She always had like knives on her, you know.
Okay.
So just in case she ran into any like creatures, she could take care of it. But
oh, she had that weapons. Always, okay, then.
Yeah. But Heather, no, poor Heather didn't. No.
Yeah. I felt sorry for Heather. I'm like, yeah, I always put her by herself. I thought that was kind of, I don't know. To me, it seems kind of dangerous when you're dealing with the paranormal because sometimes some of those spirits can be really. Really aggressive and demonic, you know, and she's by herself in the pitch black and somewhere, and everybody else is together, you know, in the same central area. I didn't like that, but
yeah,
I love Paranormal State.
I mean, and even just like the buildings, you know, the buildings we go into. I mean, for PRS, we work mainly with clients, so most of the places we went into were like up to code, but you know, when you're investigating and it's like an old asylum or something, you know. I have sprained my ankle twice going downstairs at locations. So,
okay.
You know, and I actually got, huh?
I said, okay, wow.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's even just like, you know, the physical or the environmental elements you're up against can really take a toll. I've gone places, oh my gosh, and you get just so sick afterwards, you know, with like a cold or an infection, something like that, so... It really does. It takes a toll on your body, this work.
Do you think that other universities have clubs like this as well? And if so, what was special about Penn State?
I've met tons of people that, you know, are in college and they have, you know, different clubs like that. I've met tons of people that started clubs because they were really into it and they just went to their university and, you know, asked if they could start one. I don't know what made us so special, to be honest, because I wasn't around during the time when, you know, they were, I guess, getting asked by producers to do a pilot. But I do know one of the people that created the show, I guess, and because I've heard various stories, and again, I wasn't around at that time, but I've heard people saying that, you know, PRS was shopping for a show, they were trying to put themselves out there for one. And then I've heard other ones where producers were looking. So maybe it was just a combination of both, and they just happened to find each other.
Okay.
But, you know, the paranormal at the time was really popular because of Ghost Hunters. And so I think producers were just out looking for that stuff. And I think they wanted a different spin on it. And, you know, they found this club. And they thought, oh, you know, that could be a really cool idea. And it's funny because originally Paranormal State was supposed to be like... I think it originally was, or MTV was originally interested in it. So it was supposed to be a much different show. It was supposed to be very much like here's these crazy college kids who hook up and party, but they also paranormal investigate. You know?
Yeah.
So,
I'm glad I'm glad you guys didn't go that route.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, that would have been weird.
Yes.
But the original show idea was something along the lines of that, and then, for whatever reason, MTV decided not to move forward on it, and it went to A&E, picked it up. So it became definitely, like, the more serious side of the work, which was good, because that's really how PRS was. It was very much serious work to everybody involved.
You had, seemed like you have a real, very calming effect on some of the people, like the one episode, Family Ties, was it, when the young man, they wouldn't go upstairs or something?
Yeah,
when you were talking to him and everything, you have a real calming effect, and I thought that was really really great to have, you know, when somebody's going through that. And like you said earlier, I know I hear a lot of times that clergy don't want to get involved as far as helping people that have you know, that have something going on at their house. So it was great.
Yeah, it's a tough process to go through because, well, I mean, you can always have clergy come out and bless your house. And I know we've had clients in the past that have told us before that when they mention the paranormal, then the clergy doesn't want to be involved. And I've met a lot of clergy who are fine to be involved at that level. So I think it kind of seems like a very personal preference.
Yes.
To whoever you're speaking to. But generally speaking, especially if you're talking about something like demonic or anything, you know, they take that very seriously, and they don't get involved unless they absolutely know everything is ruled out as a natural explanation. So it's hard to get them. And even if you're, I mean, even other religions, it's tough. I remember we worked with a Jewish family one time, and it's interesting because there were a lot of things about that particular case that were never shown on the show out of respect for the family.
Okay.
But we believed that that particular case was very, very negative in nature. And when we called, they asked us to call a rabbi for them. And when we were calling around, I'll never forget this, this one rabbi, when I explained to him what was happening. And I wasn't even like, can you cast out demons for us? I was just like, you know, would you mind coming by and talking to them,
right,
you know, about this? Because they're very devoted to their religion, and they believe that their religion is tied to the things that they're experiencing. Can, would you mind coming out and chatting with them, you know, just to give them some kind of assurance, somewhere to go to make them feel better at least? And when I explained everything about what was going on, the rabbi said to me at the very end, he's like, are you kidding me? And then he started laughing, and then he hung up on me.
Oh.
So, yeah, and they had kind of given me a heads up that even their religious, I guess, whatever temple they were going to at the time had kind of turned their backs on them.
Okay.
Because they were speaking up with it. So, unfortunately, that happens a lot. And it's not just for the Jewish faith. I've met people from all faiths who've had the same issue, you know. And again, it's not every single priest, it's not every single rabbi or priestess or anything like that. It seems really dependent on who you're talking to. But unfortunately, it's a common theme you run into.
What was the most bizarre case that you did with PRS that really kind of maybe shook you up a little bit?
Shook me up. The one that always sticks out to me is the glove, because we went back to that one twice, and it is such a bizarre haunting that they had. And, you know, I fully believe this family. I mean, they were so forthcoming with everything. We had them talk to our psychologist. Our psychologist, you know, their answer is always, well, they believe they're telling the truth, you know, and we certainly believe them. And they just were having strangest experiences that didn't really make a whole lot of sense. So I don't know if you remember that episode, but it was a family who they had a twin house, and they had bought the other side of the house, and they were renovating it. But yeah, because they couldn't keep contractors in. All these contractors would quit after a couple of weeks, and they'd leave all their tools.
Okay.
Now, my partner is a contractor. You don't leave your tools.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's your lifeline, you know, and the tools are expensive. You do not leave them.
Right.
So, you know, the fact that they were just like, no, but you keep them. You know what I mean? It's pretty astonishing. And, you know, so they were having those problems. They had seen a lot. The kids were scared, and they really didn't have anywhere else to turn. And so we worked with them for a number of years, and it escalated to the point where they were having just very bizarre activity. So the thing she told me that always stuck out to me was she was walking through her son's room one night, he was sleeping, and she saw a monkey sitting on his bed with him.
So,
and she saw it, she thought it was weird, and she kept it to herself, didn't say anything at all.
So a monkey?
Weeks later, a monkey.
Wow.
Yeah, like an apparition of a monkey.
Wow.
And a few days later, or a few weeks later, I can't remember which, her son came to her, and he said, Mom, I saw a monkey in my room.
Wow.
Yeah, so what that means, I have no idea, but they had some really bizarre experiences, and that case always sticks out to me because, you know, you never guarantee anybody that you can rid their house of activity, you know, because to do that, we'd have to be able to scientifically prove what this activity is, and we can't at this point. So, you know, we can't guarantee that we can get rid of something without knowing what makes it up and how it interacts and how it works. So we tried just a bunch of different things, and, you know, their house would calm down for a couple of months, but then it would start back up. So it's hard to say, but I always think about them.
And what was the name of that episode? I've never seen that one.
That one was The Glove. That was The Glove. And then there was a part two to that, I think, in season five.
Okay. Oh, you were still around that long?
Yeah, I stayed for the whole thing.
Oh, okay. All right, yeah. Well, the young lady, I didn't, this one that sticks out to me, the young lady that was, that had the entities attacking her, that was on the season two as well.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't go to that, you didn't go on that case, did you? Laura. Yes.
Yeah, that was IM6.
Yes. No, you didn't go on that case with them, did you?
Well, actually, I was there. I just wasn't on camera for it. So.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's kind of an interesting tidbit, and it was interesting because I went because I had been vetting and interviewing Laura and her family and doing all the the pre-investigation work with them.
Okay.
And so I went with the team, but when we got there, you had to make decisions about who was going to step foot into the house, and. At the time, the team didn't think it would be a good idea for me to go in there.
Okay.
So they asked me just to kind of be off location in case they needed something like research done. But I wasn't part of the active investigation at the time. When we went back the second time, I was.
Oh, okay.
So, but I worked very closely with Laura and her family.
Do you have any updates on any of those people, or Laura, or any other, especially her? Is she okay nowadays?
I don't know. I mean, when I was with PRS, we would always do follow-ups.
Okay.
And I was the person to follow up with people. So, some clients, after they go through an investigation, they just sort of want to be left alone. They really don't want to visit it again. Or they just needed some help understanding, or just at least knowing that they weren't alone.
Right.
And then they're fine, and they don't want to be involved with it anymore. Other people, wanted to keep up with us and check in with us. And it seemed to be more the people that, really had some crazy stuff happening.
Right.
And, Laura's family particularly, we did keep in touch for a while, but with cases like that, you would label as demonic, and this is actually true of all cases, you have to make sure that your clients are, If you ask them to do something such as, let's say you have a client that comes to you and says, well, the lights are turning on and off all the time. Mm. And you say, okay, well, the first thing we need you to do is check with an electrician.
Okay, yeah.
Have your wiring checked. And then if we follow up with that client and we say, have you had your wiring checked? And they say no, then, we can't do anything for them.
Right.
Because we always have to rule out every natural possibility. And I think people get scared sometimes because they think if there's a natural explanation for something, then it means that nothing paranormal is happening.
Yeah.
That's not necessarily the case. It's just we have to, you have to check into everything. From what I remember, it was very much a thing of, there was a lot of kind of homework, if you want to call it, that we needed Laura to take care of. And it just got to the point where, she was no longer interested in doing that kind of stuff. So, we couldn't really move forward with helping. But the last update I had, I think I heard she was doing good, but, I left PRS in 2011.
Right.
So I keep it. I mean, there's clients that I absolutely keep in touch with, but, it wasn't my job anymore to make those follow-ups.
Okay, I want to... Before I get the paranormal lockdown, I want to ask a couple of questions. Finishing up with PRS.
Oh yeah.
What was it like working with Ryan Buell? How was he? I heard I know about the little trouble he got in later, but just as far as working with him, what type of person was he? What type of leader was he?
Yeah, I think everybody in PRS we had some really great moments, and I think there was a lot of times where we all worked really, really well together.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's tough work, so I think sometimes that can be really stressful, and we were a bunch of 20-year-olds who somehow started working in television,
Right.
So it was, it was interesting because we were the only people in our lives that could understand what each other was going through.
Okay.
So in that way, I think we were all kind of uniquely bonded to each other. Ryan... Particularly, he's incredibly smart person.
Yes.
When it comes to the paranormal, and his later troubles, I don't really speak on that publicly.
Right.
you know, but, you know, when I worked with him, he was, I mean, he was very, you know, knowledgeable about the subject matter.
And Sergey, he was a good guy to work with as well, wasn't he?
So, I mean, everyone was great to work with during the majority of the time, I think, on Paranormal State. But, you know, towards the end of Paranormal State, I think everyone was just kind of ready to move on.
Okay. So then you go Paranormal Lockdown. How did that come about for you?
It was funny because I was working on another project at the time, and it just didn't feel right to me. And but I've been working on it for multiple years at this point, so I was kind of, you know, hesitant to leave. And I remember I walked outside of my house, and I was like, you know, a very dramatic moment with the sky, I guess. I was like, I need a sign. And I walked like 10 feet, and I looked down, and there was like a 5-leaf clover and a 6-leaf clover.
Wow.
And so I kind of took that, yeah, I took that as a sign of like, okay, if I leave this project, it's the right decision, you know?
Uh-huh.
And the very next day, I got a cold email from Nick, and then he cold called me. And we had known of each other, but we had never spoken to each other.
Okay.
So we just got on the phone one day, and we talked for like 2 hours, like we were long-lost best friends. And it just sort of happened from there.
So, what is it like going into a place and being in there? Well, you're in there for 72 hours, right?
Yeah, 72 hours. It's, I don't know, it's exciting, but it's also, you kind of, like, get drained just thinking about it because, you know, it's a really tough work to do that.
I bet.
Because you're in there for, yeah, you're in there for so long. Again, the environmental elements aren't the best.
Right.
And, you know, we're wearing ourselves down and, you know, it can be, like, a little daunting when you're first going into a location. But at the same time, it's, like, you know, not a lot of people get to have that opportunity where you get to live in a haunted location for that amount of time and really embed yourself in it and experience everything that has to offer. And so that part of it gets me really excited. And like, that's never far from my mind that it's really like incredible that we get to do that.
And you're kind of separated like at night, though. You kind of sleep in the different areas of that place, right? Is that kind of scary?
Yeah. Was that?
Is that kind of scary?
It is, yeah, for sure. But at the end of the day, you know, I do get scared.
Yes.
But I always remind myself whenever I feel that coming on that I'm conditioned to be scared. Everyone's conditioned to be scared of this stuff.
Okay.
I mean, we're conditioned to be scared of scary looking houses. You know what I mean?
Right,
like,
right.
It's just when you think of all like the childhood stories and folklore and all that stuff like that, we're taught to do it. And at the end of the day, maybe there's a good reason for that, but also maybe there's not. And so, you know, again, I go back to when we're talking about the paranormal and specifically ghosts and spirits, you know, we don't know what they are.
Okay.
We know people have these experiences. So that's where my head goes, is that I know people have these experiences. I've had these experiences. But maybe there is nothing to be afraid of. Maybe it's an environmental element that we're just not aware of yet. Maybe it really is what we think it is, and it's, you know, it has to deal with the afterlife, and, you know, but is that something to be feared? So it's just, I try to remain really, really objective, and that takes me to a good place where I can, you know, get through the night.
Where do you stand on UFOs?
Oh, I believe them.
Okay.
This is my view in the paranormal in general, is that I think if you're open to one thing, you kind of have to be open to it all.
Okay.
You know, so, yeah, I believe the possibility of UFOs, for sure.
And you believe the possibility of Bigfoot and Dogman and Black-Eyed Kids?
I believe in the possibility.
Yeah.
Until somebody can 100% to me prove no,
right,
then I think, you know, we should always be asking questions, because they go back to people have been having these experiences. So my thing is, even if, let's just say, all of them turn out to be a psychological issue,
okay,
shouldn't we be looking into that? Like, I mean, that seems kind of like, I don't know, that seems like something to me, like, we would want to figure out if everybody's hallucinating when they go into a certain building, or, you know, that seems dangerous to me. So, you know, I think that's where my work and my passion for the field really comes from is that, regardless of what the paranormal ends up being, mm-hmm. if we can find explanations for all the different, you know, experiences people have, is that I, you know, your job as an investigator is to investigate the claims.
Right.
And can you back it up objectively anyway? Can you document these experiences? And even if there, you find that they can be naturally explained away, like, okay, that's great, then there's an answer. But your job is to investigate the claims regardless of what they are.
All right. We have a few minutes left with you before I let you go. Before I let the audience go, then I want to speak with you for a second. Going to Comic-Con, what is that like? I wanted to go last year, and this year I missed out. What is Comic-Con like?
Comic-Con is amazing. I always tell people, like, go to a con. Even if you're not into this stuff, go to a con, because it is such an accepting atmosphere.
Yes.
And, you know what I mean? Because everybody is like, you're all into the same stuff. And I don't know about you, but I've always felt, I guess, a little out of place, a little weird, because I was into this stuff. And I was into, you know, I love dressing up in costumes. And my parents, like, were theater actors. You know what I mean? Usually
right.
I was, like, really into that stuff. And, you know, but my friends weren't. They were like, you're such a dork. You know? So, going to cons, I feel like I'm like, ah, oh, yes, my fellow friends.
Right.
You know, we can all be weird together, and it's not weird, you know. So I always find it such a beautiful experience, because you find so many people that are just, you know, just into the same stuff you are, and they don't bat an eyelash at it, you know.
And you guys being so young, I know it was something with everybody wanting autographs from you and everything.
Yeah, we get people that come through our line, you know, we do meet and greets there, and people, you know, want to talk to us about the paranormal and our experiences, and a lot of times you have people that, you know, they had experiences themselves, and they're just looking for, you know, validation in some way. So, you know, you always try to take a couple minutes to talk to each person, because, you know, they take the time to come out and see you, and we're always so grateful for that, so... Always happy to talk to people about that stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Then I didn't know you were you acted in some films. I've seen at least about 5 films that you've done where you haven't had parts in them. The Cafe Artist.
Yeah.
Who's Jenna? The Last Apartment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when I went to college, I was actually my double major. I was a theater performance major, and then my other major was integrative arts, where you just kind of make up your own curriculum with the help of an advisor.
Okay.
So for that one, I did music production. So I've been playing music and writing music since I was 10 and 11. And, you know, the acting thing, I just, again, I grew up with my parents performing, so it was just always something our family did.
Uh-huh.
So it's very much, like, such a big part of my heart. And just, like, who I am, really, I guess. But so I'm looking to jump into creative things as much as I can, and I love storytelling, so it's, you know, kind of any form of storytelling, I just love doing it, so.
Okay, well, thank you very much. What's new for you? What are you doing? Are you still doing the paranormal lockdown, or are you doing something else? And
yeah, so Paranormal Lockdown just finished airing in the UK,
mm-hmm.
and I know we've been getting a lot of questions about when it's coming to the US, and as I'm sorry, my dog just went a little nuts. But it is coming to the U.S., and hopefully, you know, Nick and I can make an announcement soon. We're just waiting for the final go-ahead from the network, and then we can make that announcement for everybody. And then just a couple more projects coming up, which I'm very excited about, and especially I have a blog called Haunted Kitchens, which one of my other favorite things to do is to cook.
Okay.
And I grew up with my mom was a, she used to be a baker, and my grandfather was a pastry chef, and my other side of the family had an Italian restaurant. So, you know, it's very ingrained in us. And
okay.
So Haunted Kitchens is just a fun way to explore the culinary arts and haunted places at the same time. And that's through my website.
That's on your website?
Yeah, KatrinaWeidman.com.
Okay, curious, is Heather still working in the paranormal field, or what is she doing now? Has she moved on to something else?
Heather, Josh, and I are co-founders of Etherton Paranormal. So right now our resources are pretty limited because it's only the three of us that run it, and but we're there to offer kind of more like education and guidance to people that are having issues and they need understanding and help.
Okay.
And a lot of times we refer people out to other groups that we've worked with. And very, very rarely we will take on a case where we physically go there. And again, that's just because, you know, with it only being the three of us, resources are very limited. So, you know, it's a little tough. But we do have Atherton Paranormal together, so she's very much still involved.
Okay. Is there a website for that as well?
Yes, athertonparanormal.com.
Okay. Well, questions, we've been locked in with Katrina Weidman from Paranormal State and Paranormal Lockdowns. It's been an honor to speak with you. Questions, you've been locked in. I would like to thank you for listening to my conversation with Ms. Katrina Weidman on Katrina Weidman Investigates. I hope you all enjoy my show here on BBS Radio and Television Network. We sincerely hope to bring you the best of paranormal talk and independent underground music artists. I'm an artist myself, so we hope to bring you the best of that. And also, you know, trending topics, current events, those topics as well. But mostly underground music, hip-hop, jazz, neo-soul, whatever type of music, rock and roll. We love it all. And paranormal talk, crime, true crime. You know, we hope to bring you the best of that. And hopefully you will enjoy the material that we present to you here on the BBS network of television and radio. Please feel free to follow me or to say hi on any of my social network platforms. Facebook, I'm Roy Washington. On X, formerly known as Twitter, I'm @SmoothNovelist. @SmoothNovelist. On Instagram, @Novelist2019, Novelist2019, on Facebook, Roy Washington, LinkedIn, Leroy Washington, which is my government name, Leroy Washington, and you can email me, lp.wash@yahoo.com, that's L as in Leroy, P as in Patrick, period, Wash, W-A-S-H, @yahoo.com. We here at Quest Nation would really appreciate your support here on BBS Television and Radio Network. Please subscribe. Please subscribe and show your support. And you can hit us up on Cash App, $Leroy1812, L-E-R-O-Y, 1812. $Leroy1812 on Cash App. We'd really appreciate it. Thank you very much. Thanks for listening. We hope to provide great material for you to listen to and to keep you entertained and to keep you informed. Thank you very much. I'm Roy Washington. And again, please feel free to leave notes. Feel free to reach out. If you have a story to tell, if you have something that you want to share, please let me know. Hit me up on my email or inbox me on any one of those social network platforms I provided. And contact me. I want to hear from all of the listeners. Everyone, please contact me. I will respond. I will respond. Thank you very much. God bless. We're going to close out with two of my songs. One from my latest EP called The Final Ingredient. This song is called We Won't Stop. Features inspiring young artist Chico Manolo and Griff Galaxy from Toronto, Canada, who did a lot of work with Drake before Drake blew up. Here's We Won't Stop, and followed up by a joint that's going to be on my new EP that's coming up, also featuring Griff Galaxy, and it's called The Silence. It's a snippet, The Silence. I'm Roy Washington. Thank you so much for your support, and I hope that this can be very beneficial for us both. I hope to provide you a great informational, educational, and entertaining listening material. God bless.
Stop. We won't stop. won't stop. We won't stop. We won't stop.
It's been a long time since the mic was blessed properly, and everybody knows it's just still stopping me. But pen hits the paper, there's really none greater. I'm moving the groove like I was Money Mayweather. In my fighter stance, title belt, gold band. I fought for power, my rhymes may kill a man. Unimaginable spiritual rant from the prodigal son, cause the day is almost done. And little did you know, I'd hit you with the spiritual, beneficial to your soul, observation mad clinical. Even if the masses fell to the dark side, the sun will still rise, cause his name is worldwide. The Quest Nation clan is out to rock the land. My thoughts are power, and my rhymes may kill a man.
Can't stop, we won't stop, can't stop, won't stop, never, can't stop, we won't stop, we won't stop.
One hit, one song, contagion, hit rock bottom, frustration, sit back, relax, started meditating, now I elevated to another level that I never thought I'd reach, press it up like church. About to preach like pastor, see the masterpiece, unlock the master key. It's up to me, not just my team. In the kitchen, we cook the recipe. Worry and cheat, go, we leave foe. Killing the game, it's foul, like free throw. We won't stop, I owe it to my people. Since the days they wrestled my boy Nico.
Can't stop, we won't stop, can't stop, won't stop, never, can't stop, we won't stop, we won't stop.
Roll the dice, cold as ice, open up a can of whoop, bet you wanna slice, wanna flight. I'm so fly, wanna kite, what's the hype? Prototype, spit and crack, I'm a hype. Open up my third eye, gotta make the world mine. See him, it's reverse MC, but not square. Y'all Bluetooth, y'all bite this first, but we don't care. Got concession, I'm a stand up guy, but I got chairs. Super fly like, I'm a bald eagle, but I got ears. Was in a shot, on a shot, from the mill to I would drop. Free from style, hold the side, break my fist, don't decline. Kinda wild, twisted mind, but laid back, I'm reclined. King vibe, I'm a line, making history, I'm a mind. Lines punch like a wine, need a kick out, not trying. I don't sell dreams, I pursue them, and they vibe. For protests, but I brought peace if they try to ride. Looking at my enemy, like, no, I don't need to try.
Can't stop, we won't stop, can't stop, won't stop, never, can't stop, we won't stop, we won't stop.
As we bring the track back, another 8-bar pack, the cops are all in, cause the line to kill again. The duty of the devil is to take your next level, ruin your goals, and blacken your soul. But the novelist is here with that medicated lyrical cereal, and as one, we all stand superior. So catch this power ride, zooming from the dark side, get suited and rooted. Relax and stay a while. Our man told me that there's no time for you when your marks get set. I'm placing my bet on a 6-4-5-3-2-1 go. It's a race to the top. We won't be stopped.
We won't stop. Can't stop. Won't stop. Never. Can't stop. We won't stop. We won't stop. We won't stop. Can't stop. Won't stop. Never. Can't stop. We won't stop. We won't stop.
In a wild style, lyrical exile, building a pen to go to mile. Knee high to a duck, but ready to emerge. Pass me the mic, y'all, was Leroy D's first word. Firing through the phases of funk and do hop, rock and roll and pop to bring your soul some hip hop. Never counting the times that my baby cradle rocked, there was a non-stop keen and screaming. Shouting out to Griff, man, my brother Chico. Beauty and the Beast, release those rhymes to kill again.
Yeah.